This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. If you've been following this year's US elections, you've probably come across news pieces with the latest poll data on who's leading the race, even at this late date. Public opinion polls or surveys are everywhere, and they've become indispensable to finding out what people think and how they behave. But the question is, what makes a good poll, and how accurately do they actually reflect the political views of a population? Joining me now to discuss the politics of polling is Ibrahim Sufian, the director of Malaysia's first polling organization, Merdeka Center. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So have you been following the US elections yourself? How has you know, this whole roller coaster ride been making you feel?
Yes, I've been following it, and I think on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is total freak out, I'm at number 7 in terms of the level of excitement, as well as worrisome in terms of what the outcome means for the rest of the world.
7 is not too bad, I think.
It depends. As the night goes, if Hillary Clinton does better in places like Nevada, in Florida, and New Hampshire, then I think the tension will subside.
I read that it was actually a visit to a Democrat candidate's volunteer center during a U.S. election that actually inspired you to start the Merdeka Center. Could you share that story?
Yes. I mean, this was back at the point in time when I was pursuing my master's, and I was studying in a university, Michigan State University, and it's in Lansing, Michigan. And at that point in time, it was in the 1994, if I'm not wrong, presidential race, but there were also a number of Congress races going on. And one woman, Debbie Stabenow, who was a first-time politician, ran against the incumbent, who was a three-term congressman. And during that period, there were canvassing operations, canvassing activities by people from the party who came to the door, and then they asked for volunteers. And I joined just because I was curious.
In your opinion, how much do public opinion polls pervade life in America, you know, especially in terms of commercial and political life?
Well, I think the American culture, I think, values data very highly, not just in politics, but much more so in business. And I think if we look at the emergence of what we now call big data and analytics, it for the most part has originated from the U.S. And being pushed by companies and also people in academia. And so polls, surveys, as well as analytics of consumer and electorate information is being done very regularly and very dependent upon by decision makers to make their call, whether it's business decision, product placement, or even choosing whom to vote.
Do we see that sort of pervasiveness here in Malaysia in terms of polls?
Well, I think the interest is growing. I mean, as one of the earlier companies, organizations starting work on polling here in Malaysia, we've noticed that the acceptance of polling has gradually increased. And we noticed that in the area of social politics where we are mostly immersed, we noticed that many candidates are interested in polling and they are conducting polls themselves. And even state public agencies have routinely now increasingly engaged in surveys, not just to meet procedures, but genuinely want to find out whether the policies or the products they place into the public is going to be well received, and also trying to expect problems, anticipate problems before they come out.
So let's get the 101 of polls out of the way. What are the different types of polls that you can use?
Well, I think in the basic implementation of polling, basically most polls are quantitative in nature. In that sense, it is mass surveys. The methodology or approach taken, whether one meets the does the interview in person, does the interview over the phone or internet or so on, those varies. But I think the fundamental concept is that it's a survey basically means collecting information, opinions or viewpoints from as many people as possible. The other aspect of polling that is less scientific is something that's called qualitative survey, where it's like a straw poll. You go out in the market and you talk to people, or you get a bunch of people who are like-minded in a room and ask them specific questions.
What determines who gets polled? You know, I suppose the idea, if you're trying to kind of get a yardstick of where the public is at, you would want to get as wide a sample of the public as possible. But can a poll ever be truly random in that sense?
Well, I think that's the holy grail of pollsters, to get a poll that's truly representative and truly random. And the randomness, I think, basically helps to improve the reliability and the representativeness of the eventual sample. So I think just to, I think, get the main issue across, the main thing is not the number of people in the survey. The main objective of getting a good poll out there is getting a sample of respondents that corresponds to the population you wish to study. So in the case of the US right now, I'm aware that as reading through the material and literature that's coming out, that people are looking at not just the broad population, but also specific populations in the key battleground states. And within those states, there are specific constituencies or segments of population that would be very interesting. So Puerto Rican Americans, for example, or Americans who are of Hispanic descent but from, let's say, Mexico. So there are differences from one segment to the next. And so the polling, it attempts to drill down to as small a segment as possible so that you can elicit something useful for, say, a campaign.
With that said, we've heard of sampling error. That's been described as a built-in and unavoidable feature of all proper polls. What is a sampling error?
Essentially, sampling error is a bias that creeps in. As you construct a sample, and then as you put the poll out in the field attempting to contact these people, some errors occur. For example, sampling error sometimes occurs in the form of coverage biases, meaning you intend to poll the people out there, but some of them are not contactable or do not wish to be contacted. One of the interesting examples is that in the 2012 or even the 2008 presidential election, when President Obama ran against the John McCain at that point in time, there was this concern that there are certain segments of people who do not wish to be polled, and they will be maybe people who do not wish to elect a black president but did not wish to express that, right? So they may refuse to be polled, and therefore it may depress the actual poll figures. So you have that accounts for sampling error as well. Or certain groups in society do not make it into the polling because they have no access to telephone or internet, the methodology with which the poll is being conducted.
So realistically then, what can we say polls, what are polls capable of truly capturing?
Well, a poll basically is a snapshot of the situation out there. The poll pretty much is only good for the moment that it is, the snapshot is taken. The picture changes the moment after that and also the moment before. That said, there are key trends that remain, and the polls will capture that. I think when we look at election campaigns and the utilization of polling to see voting intentions and so on, we are ultimately looking at very, very small numbers. And what I mean is, if let's say you have a poll of, say, 2,000 people across a particular state, like, say, which is battleground now, like Florida, and you are looking at who are they going to vote for, ultimately, many portions of the population have already decided or are already predisposed to one of the four candidates. But there might be small segments there that are wavering or changing. So you are really focusing on those small segments. And ultimately, in a particular poll, they may just number 30 people or 40 people. So you're really extrapolating information from a very small group of respondents.
It may be different for you, reading the information that's coming out of the polls in America compared to, say, the layperson who has no experience conducting polls. And I want to get into that a little bit more about the confusing information that seems to be coming our way. We'll get to that right after this. You are listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. My guest is Ibrahim Sufian, director of Merdeka Center, and we're talking about the politics of polling. So we've established how polls are conducted and the kind of snapshot that they're meant to represent. But right now, the snapshot is deeply confusing. Every other day, there is a headline that's emerged, calling in favor of one candidate or another, often in the very same moment. What do you make of this? I mean, how do we navigate the news landscape right now when we're looking at something as big as the U.S. elections and the polls keep suggesting different things?
Well, if you look at the U.S., I think there are many polls that are coming out on a daily basis right now as we reach the end of the race. And there has been a historical study in terms of how different polling agencies or polling houses reflect the data. And I suspect in part is how they develop the sample for the database or the data set that from which they derive the surveys. The sampling is the most important part. And for the most part, when people conduct polls, they would have predetermined the types of people, locations, and also the demographics of the population they wish to interview. And arising out of that, you get a result, a percentage, you know, 46 for Hillary or 42 for Trump. And that's what I saw on CNN last night. And another poll coming out from an agency that has typically been doing for Republicans would have the numbers more favorably for Trump. So in many sense, you will get a mixed view depending on the historical inclination of the polling agency, and that in part is influenced by how they develop the sample and to a lesser extent how they interpret the data.
So does that mean that we just can't trust any of the polls right now? Because I mean, in that sense, there is no truly independent poll as such.
There are polling agencies out there, let's say Pew Research Center, which is nonpartisan, not associated with any of the competing parties. And there are also polling agencies hired or developed by the media organizations themselves, which are for the most part independent. But at the end of the day, the poll is just a survey of, you know, a small part, small, very tiny fraction of the population out there. And therefore, it could not completely reflect what is going there. And therefore, you know, for us who are doing surveys as a living, we have to go by the margin of error. And the margin of error typically represents the range or the deviation from the mean of the result. So the larger the sample, the smaller the range that one would get. But you will never have a one pinpoint number that tells you with exacting accuracy or what the numbers are like. You will get a range. So it'll be between, you know, 40 to 44%. But for simplicity's sake, people will typically give the midpoint. That's why there is some kind of confusion there. But if you look at the current U.S. Elections, there has been clear trends in terms of how the polling data has shown the predisposition of the electorate towards these candidates. We noticed that Hillary did very well after the last of the series of three debates, and it was clear that she was outpolling Trump, but Trump has caught back, and the recent controversy regarding the emails, I think that has narrowed.
The FBI.
Yeah, the FBI statement. And yesterday, now the FBI said that the judgment hasn't changed since July, so that's a positive for Hillary. And we might see her extend her lead by a smaller margin just in time for Election Day.
How do we recognize the bias that can be built directly into polls sometimes? And I guess the flip side of that question is, how do you remove that bias when, of course, ultimately you're people asking people questions?
Yes, you do. You have biases that are built into the polls, presumably because the polls are themselves implemented by people or even machines. There are many kinds of biases out there. So one of the few strategies that pollsters typically use is to ensure that the sampling is as reflective as possible. And there's a huge debate about that. What constitutes a representative sample? And we can go into the minutiae of that in terms of the time of day that you're supposed to poll, the part of the country, the particular demographics, and so on. That, the questions itself, I think in the case of the Hillary versus Trump race, the questions are pretty direct. And the other part that what we've noticed is that, in at least in the U.S. and in the more developed markets, is the problem of getting to people. Most people, I think, in the U.S. have their phone numbers unlisted, making it exceedingly very difficult for pollsters to reach them. So this, I think, introduces a bias in the sense that there might be certain segments that are omitted from a poll because they were not contactable. So it's in the Malaysian context, will be you have a survey company doing a survey on the streets of KL, but there's some gated communities they couldn't enter. So the views of those people in those condominiums or gated communities are not considered in that particular survey.
When would you consider a poll not good or not useful?
A poll is useless when it is very obvious that the sampling is completely unrepresentative. In the case of the U.S., because the market has been in place for so long and it's such a competitive, rigorous environment, it's very hard to see that. But I think in the places like in Malaysia or in different parts of Asia, we still see polls that are very unrepresentative of the people they were meant to study. And by so saying, it would be something like you wish to poll residents of a particular area about either their political inclination or their views of a particular policy or product, but the sample that is derived completely is not representative of the people it's meant to study. Polls are guided by the research objectives. If the research objective says that we want to study only this part of the population, that's fine. But the sample better reflect that part of the population.
What are ugly polls? Well, we're talking about useless polls. What are ugly polls?
Well, basically, bad polls are polls that are not actually meant to understand or elicit new information, but it's actually a much more crude form of campaigning. This is what we call push polls, polls that begin or insert leading statements into them and basically are meant to influence people rather than to actually gain their opinion or understand how they feel about a certain issue. Those are bad. Second are polls that are meant to skew the outcomes. Polls that are not representative of the population but then dressed up as such in order to skew an outcome. There's been, I think, in some countries where polling is not allowed during election periods or particularly during campaign periods or 3 days before the election day because the authorities, I think this is in India, where the authorities do not want the members of the public to be influenced by polls that may not be scrupulously done.
In your opinion then, are polls, do they do more good than harm in an election process?
Yeah, certainly. Polls do immensely more good than harm. And the reason is because if it's done well, for a candidate, it helps the candidate understand the electorate better. It helps the candidate allocate resources, plan, as well as anticipate, if he or she wins, how to serve the electorate. For agencies that are working with members of the public or consumers, the polls allow them to get a snapshot of what people are perceiving them and so that they can fix things, because it's very costly to contact everyone, as in a census, and it is also more costly to fix a problem after it has already occurred, particularly image issues and so on. So it's better to conduct a small poll ahead of a particular event or to get views so that one can better prepare. So polls are always useful.
So would you place any restriction on them in reporting an election or in terms of their influence and prominence, or is it part of a free democracy that you allow them to run on?
Well, I think polls are part and parcel of a democratic process. Not every single citizen will be able to go up there and speak to a leader or a political party activist and tell them what he or she feels or what he or she wants for the candidate or the government to do. So polls provide an outlet for that. So it is, I think, part of the public's participation in the political process. So these voices are heard. And this is where Merdeka Center comes in. I mean, we see ourselves as a bridge between the ordinary person on the street and the leaders up high so that we can convey their views in numerical format, you know, and for leaders to understand. And so this is an important part of democracy. As rancorous and as noisy as it seems and confusion that it brings, it still is the voice of the people. And over time, if one becomes used to this, it becomes part and parcel of the landscape, and people who are engaged in this arena begin to understand that it's a form of scorekeeping, except that you have many scorekeepers, you know, and we can see in the region where polling is more vibrant, like in Taiwan, polling is very well developed. In Indonesia, even, there's a lot of polls going on as a result of the democratic process of the country.
Looking at the types of polls that have emerged, the types of polls that dominate the headlines, what lessons have you been taking in terms of how you do your work at Merdeka Center and the role that you see yourself playing in our democracy and in our process of election?
Well, there are a few lessons that we've learned from not just this current Trump versus Hillary campaign, but also the recent Brexit campaign that happened in England, in the UK, where we find that, number one, you know, the pollsters typically get it wrong because of the biases that become inbuilt into the way they've collected data over the years. And this is something that we are acutely aware. Number two, and we look at the Trump versus Hillary campaign, we are also interested to study how the various campaigns utilize this polling data in order to develop communications and policies to be delivered back to the people in the future. And I think thirdly is in terms of our work here in Malaysia, you know, polling is still, I would say, in its infancy, and many people do not fully understand what it means. A poll is simply, you know, a snapshot, as I said. So sometimes the picture is pretty, sometimes it's not. It doesn't reflect on the intention of the user. If the poll is being done right, anybody can do a poll, really. It's not rocket science. And so if someone were lying or not doing a good poll, it could be easily discoverable because anybody can go out and replicate. And if they don't get the same results, then there's something wrong with the way it was done. So for us here, it's to inform ourselves about the latest methodologies, the latest problems that people encounter, and how do we overcome them in our own environment here, which has its own unique set of challenges.
Thank you very much for coming in. I've been speaking today with Director of Merdeka Center, Ibrahim Sufian. We've been discussing the politics of polling. You have been listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.